Blog Talk Radio.
Many gods have watched over human affairs. Each element, each human quality seemed to have a god named for it. At some point around the 6th century BC, a spiritual philosopher named Zoroaster brought to light the existence of two main gods, you might say. One who's good, Ahura Mazda. And one who is of destruction, Angra Mainyu. The world was never the same since. Welcome to Mainstream Universe. Join us in our circle. Of Main Street Universe. Behind me is my brother, the Reverend Scott Samler Michael, on the drums. And this evening, I'd like to remind you that Main Street Universe is a network of 5 shows starting with this one, Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And that is Main Street Universe, the flagship show, the one that started it all. And that is with my friend Kevin Baird, who I started with, and now with hostess Janice. And now the return of Mr. Brett Hellman, the Velvet Lion himself.
The Velvet Lion returns!
Scott gave him that nickname tonight off the top of his head, so we went with it. Anyway, also on Friday evenings at midnight, Jesse Ann Nichols George, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. She's the author of four books now. First two are Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the companion workbook. She has two more coming out. I won't announce what they're about yet. I'll let her do that. But that's Friday evenings at midnight, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. On Sundays, Transcendence with your host, Darren Bouquer. Darren is a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. That's right. And that's 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Then, of course, Monday evening at 9 p.m., 10 p.m. Eastern sometimes. It shifts according to his availability. Mr. Kevin Baird, Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey. And Kevin can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. Which brings us back to Tuesdays at now 10:30 in the evening, Mary Phelan and her show, Inner Wisdom. Mary Phelan has been on television for now 14 years with her show Telepathic TV with her host Neville Johnston. So that's our lineup thus far on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Main Street Universe!
Now tonight, our topic is Christo-Paganism. And we are rejoined by, and I guess this one gets a big, powerful drum roll, our old co-host, our former Eye in the Sky information specialist, the Velvet Lion himself, Mr. Brett Hellman. All right.
And the first thing I must say on my return, the Velvet Lion.
We have no idea where it came from. I just said, hey, Brett's returning tonight, and Scott says, the Velvet Lion returns.
I'm a little bit salty tonight.
Fair enough.
Anyway. Our topic tonight is Christo-Paganism, Brett. And you've been gone from us for a while, so I'm curious, just to start right off, tell the audience what you've been doing, what you've been up to.
Well, I've gone back to school. I mean, I was doing the show a little bit while in school during the spring and summer, but during the fall and winter semesters, it became just impossible for me to not have classes during the show time. So we have to take on the stay-in-school stance, get a college degree, all that fun stuff.
Right.
And apparently it's worked, because in the time that I've been gone, I've gone from a, I'll just say, abysmal GPA to a 3.0. So
that's good.
And go back and work hard. If you
what sort of courses
school.
Are you specializing in?
Anthropology and history.
Anthropology and history. Okay. And we mentioned that tonight our topic is Christo-Paganism. And, of course, I started off discussing Zoroaster a little bit. And you did a paper, I believe, on Zoroaster, did you not?
I did. For my ancient history class, it was the first paper I wrote returning, and I thought it was going to crash and burn, but apparently it did rather well. So.
And my brother's changing his drum head.
All right.
We're in a studio. Now, Zoroaster, the reason I started with that is because I sort of consider Zoroaster to be the beginning, or sort of the organized beginning anyway, I guess, of monotheism, and which to me eventually led to Christianity, sort of a simplifying away from all these different pagan gods all over the place, and just like, here you go, there's for and against. Now, some Zoroastrians would say it's not as extreme as outsiders think it is. But there's obviously, though, a similarity because, you know, you have the good Ahura Mazda, and then you have the destruction spirit, you know, Angra Mainyu. And this sort of takes all these complex pantheons and all these different little deities and beings doing all their crazy stuff that they do and simplifies them into two entities, you know, you're with us or against kind of a thing. makes it a little more absolute. And in a way, in a compassionate way, maybe makes it simpler for the worshiper.
Well, yes, but there are a couple of things that I have to make to point out. We honestly don't know when Zoroaster lived. I mean, his dates go from 6,000 BC
right.
to 600 BC. I mean, that is about as far as you can get off the timeline.
Right.
We honestly don't know.
I just
know.
Said somewhere around
idea.
6,000 BC in my intro. So
we have a better idea of when Abraham, which is around, which was about 2,000 BC to 1,800 BC, which is a little bit smaller gap. Another thing to note is that Zoroastrianism had a much, much less harsh penalty on other religions. It didn't have the extremist view that the Abrahamic religion seemed to hold.
Right.
And it showed in the earlier Persian empires, when it really had a very open-door policy with religion as long as you paid your taxes. And there's a possible reason for that. There is a series of beings, and I forgot off the top of my head what they are called, but it translates to helping spirits. And what they could possibly be, the ones that are we know for sure, were the polytheistic gods of earlier Persia. And that could also be possibly expanded to all the gods that are helpful as opposed to baneful, those that hurt. Now that's a leap, and I admit it, but I make the connection that it's a possibility why they are a bit more open to the idea of other faiths.
And since you mentioned, and we're both talking about, you know, things originating in Persia, one of the Christian-pagan comparisons that has a lot of things in common is Mithraism, which I think, you know, originated in Persia in Greco-Roman times, and the Greeks and the Romans really adopted this. And there's a lot of similarities in the practices of Mithraism, a form of paganism, and Christianity. And I'll mention couple, or unless you wanted to go ahead, Brett, go ahead.
I was going
to
say, I'm really glad you brought that up. And I'm going to let you go on, but I want to say really quick that there's a lot of people out there that try and put connections that aren't there, and that's one of the ones they'll point out is Mithraism. And many of them will put that with Zoroastrianism, that he is the Christ of Zoroastrianism. And from my research, that connection's just not there. Now, everything else about the connections between Christ and Mithra are pretty much spot on. But that's a large distinction that it is not the same religion. It came from a very different people with very different ideas that maybe were trying to tell the same story as this group of Christians. Or it came about the same time as did Zoroastrianism, possibly came around the same time as Judaism.
Right.
Well, Brett, you know, like, of course, I think you're right, and the fact that, you know, the Zoroastrians had a particular sort of monotheism, I mean, really, you know, it comes after the cult of Amun-Ra in Egypt, and it comes, you know, most likely, you know, after the more radical monotheism of, like, you know, early first millennial Judaism. So it's interesting, and so they come up in Persia, and actually nobody's actually sure if the Persians or the Zoroastrians influenced the Hebrews who were in exile in Babylon, because that's where Persia is, you know. And Or if it was the other way around, that the Hebrews brought the more radical monotheism there. And, of course, it would have been expressed differently, you know, in light of their different cultures. But, yeah, it's really a great conversation.
Yes, and you mentioned Aten-Ra, which is a great source. I actually had to bring that up another time when I was speaking. I was doing a talk at one of our pagan festivals here at Convocation. I was talking about sun gods. And I talked about how sun god monotheists tend to really take over. I mentioned Aten-Ra and El-Gabal as examples, which Aten-Ra was in Egypt, and King Aten-Ra took the name as the same name as the god, and ended up taking over all the temples. And as soon as he was dead, all the polytheistic religions came back, and El-Gabal did the same thing.
Yeah.
And that is actually where we get our festival of Saturnalia, the Feast of the Unconquered Sun. And that is a connection.
That's also
to
the etymology of the end of contemporary Christian prayers, even Amen. Is that
Aten-Ra?
Yeah, it's etymologically linked to the name for the sun god of Egypt, which is an interesting thing to remind people.
So there are a lot of connections that meet forth through various names and practices surviving. How the angels come from Syria, and they go into Persia, and they either come through Judaism or they come through Zoroaster. We're not exactly sure which came first, the chicken or the egg, as we can say in this conversation.
One interesting thing I'd like to, or a couple interesting things I'd like to point out, is some of those commonalities of Mithraism and Christianity. One was the originally celebrated birth of Christ, which was January 6th, was the same thing as the same day. Well, that was through the Egyptian Aeon, January 6th. And that one also carried over for a while, and the Christians took it over in the 9th century. There's another comparison that the baptismal that took place in March and April, the initiates of Mithraism were initiated. They had the seven sacraments in Christianity and the seven initiations in Mithraism. And there's another interesting one, and I'll let you comment. Jesus was crucified between two thieves. One went to heaven, one went to hell. Mithras is depicted between two torches, a popular image, Mithra, between two torches, one pointing up to heaven, one pointing downward. So that meaning might have been a little different, but it was there's a lot of similarities there, as well as a bread ritual, Misa, which was Mass in English. And again, I mentioned the seven sacraments, and the other commonalities that they have with Mithra and the Christ and the Romans.
You are absolutely right about that, the fact that there were two thieves. One converted there on the cross, before he was actually both of them were mocking Christ at first, and one converted right there. So there might be a story there in that two halves, that two sides. I'm not sure the symbology there with Mithraism. I have not studied it as much as I probably should have, knowing the connections. But it is interesting that notice that there are seven initiatory rites and there are seven sacraments. And the seven sacraments are very important, especially in Roman Catholicism and Greek Orthodoxy, and to some extent the Anglican Communion, much more so than they are in the Protestants. And I mean, you almost have to be baptized to have any chance of salvation in Roman Catholicism. Now, that's not exactly true. There are extenuating circumstances. I mean, you can't really get baptized on your deathbed.
Right. And let me make another comparison, since we're on that same conversation about salvation through Mithraism and through Christianity. Now, I think perhaps through the pagan one, it was meant to be more, maybe the torch being up and the other torch being down, maybe one being enlightenment and the other one being you're not enlightened. That can be a debate for another day. As you know, like the nimbus, right? Do you have the light around you or do you not? The light around you. But here's one, a quote from Mithraism, and you'll recognize it pretty quickly, actually, in Christianity. He that will not eat of my body and drink of my blood, so that he may be one with me and I with him, the same shall not know salvation. Now, in Christianity, of course, John 6:53, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, ye have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh, drinketh my blood, hath eternal life. So there's definitely this similarity again of a lot of similarities there between that particular pagan practice and Christianity.
And he repeated that phrase. Jesus repeated that phrase three times. He was. They asked him to explain it, and he just repeated it. He didn't really clarify it. It was pretty clear. That is my body. That is my blood. The Protestants see it as symbolic, Roman Catholicism through transubstantiation, and that's a totally different debate for a different day that I will not put into. But it literally becomes the body and blood. I believe it's a spiritual truth. It's not just a symbol. I believe it's more so. But it is the same words, almost verbatim. And it repeated.
And like you said, repeated, because Scott said, well, he thought it was later. But yes, remember, it was repeated multiple times. So I was basically quoting one of them.
Yeah.
And another aspect of Christianity that I think is interesting that has commonalities, and that's what we're sort of doing in this conversation, folks, is drawing out some commonalities between Christianity and paganism. One interesting group, from taking us away from the Mithras now and into sort of a Christian sect, if you will, is the Gnostics. And they even use what some people might call a pagan version of the cross, that little cross that often represents the four directions, and even in like medicine wheels, it does. And they had some interesting belief systems about living totally for spirit and not in the material world whatsoever. Now, I'm not sure, you know, pagans historically had higher spiritual beliefs as well as, you know, ones tied to the earth. I guess maybe even some neo-paganism and other different groups were that sort of earth worship thing, but they did have some interesting beliefs, the Gnostics. And
that's one of my areas. That's
the holy high church kind of thing.
That's one of my areas where I really differ. I think it's an interesting belief, but I really differ with the Gnostics, and I've read many of their scriptures, and I continue to do so. But one area where I really diverge them is the world evil, the physical world evil.
Right.
Well, I revere nature, and I wish I could do more for it. And I see that as one of my biggest failures, is that I'm not as, you know, earth-minded as I should be. And I, you know, I'm making the attempt. But I don't see this world as something that is evil and made imperfect. I think there is something very wrong going on, And one of the things I'm reading in my religion class is a book, God Is Not One. And it takes a very different take than what I do on the world religions. But it says we all religions have a same starting point, that something isn't right. And I would agree with that to a point, but I would say that it's spirits trying to fix it, not just the religions trying to fix it.
Right, and one of the different things between certain pagan paths and, say, the Christian doctrine, as most people know it in the modern day, now there's very different variations according to who you talk to, is that the earth is here for our progression as well. You know, the belief in reincarnation. Some people think reincarnation has been left out of the Bible, that it was there before in certain books and texts have been lost over time. There's a couple that are in there. There's one in Matthew's that mentions a person having past lives. And there's another famous example I can't remember right now. Was it Elijah?
You know, John the Baptist and Elijah.
It was the Elijah John the Baptist connection of saying, oh, well, that's because, you know, this person was this person, and God does that once or twice in the Bible, actually, mentioning that, oh, someone was someone else once before in a past life. And I think it's a bit left over from which will take us to maybe the next portion of our conversation, was, of course, the old argument that pagans like to make a lot. We were here first. And that I actually did read that there was, oh, when was that? There was a Pope Lyon, I think his name was, who had said he thought that paganism being there, oh yeah, it's around 120 Common Era, Bishop Lyons claimed the devil preemptively placed paganism on the earth foreseeing Christ's birth so that he could later claim that it was there first and deceive the humans. So he was saying that paganism being first was a trick of the devil, because the devil is very tricky and he can could predict the future, could predict the birth of Christ, and said, well, I'm establishing this. So they were doing a retro preemptive strike devil explanation of what paganism
was. Oh, of course.
That one gets us too.
Yeah, well, the dinosaurs were just put there to make us look for stuff and not think of God. You know, similar idea. I've heard that spoken of in churches. So
I was going to say I'm really happy you're back. That's all.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
And so I thought that was an interesting argument, that they make the argument that it was a trick of the devil that these other religions were there first. He knew it. It was a preemptive strike.
Yeah.
And that was in 120 Common Era. So now, Brett, what I'd like to do is discuss a little bit of your history in this. And you once studied to be a Christian deacon and actually received the title, I believe.
Yes. But I first want to go back to the couple of seconds and say that we were here first argument. I don't care what side it is. Doesn't that just sound childish?
Well,
we were here first.
But
and I mean, we as human beings have been here for a long time.
Number
and
one,
we are just babies.
Yeah. That doesn't mean you're right. And number two, who can prove you actually were here first? Right? Many different ways.
Right. I mean, it's humans have been here a long time, and we're still babies on the scale of time. We have not been here as long as many of our, you know, previous ancestors. We still got a long way to go. I love when I hear, like, the United States parallels to Rome. I mean, we're only 200 years old. The Roman Empire lasted 1,000 years. We're making some pretty weak statements by going, we were here first. My history. My history began when I was a teenager, and I didn't really have a rebellious phase, I guess, the way that many people do. But I did have the, you know, the curious phase. And my first book that I picked up on paganism is one that I will not recommend to anybody today, but it was Teen Witch by Silver Ravenwolf.
That was your first book?
That was my first book. It was not the first book I actually finished reading. That was one by Amber Kay much later on.
Okay.
But
Amber Kay's a little better.
But that was the first thing that brought me into paganism. I guess I did come in through, you know, fantasy novels. Harry Potter was not around yet, so I was not in that
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons, yeah, the Christians will be arguing it's the gaming. That's what did it. And, well, for about a year, I was really practicing it and really studying it, and I thought it was, you know, really cool, and I still had a lot of connections with it. And then I became a Christian. The whole saved thing, you know, I started joining the Methodist Church because that was the one my grandmother did. And then September 11th happened. And I believe everybody remembers where they were on September 11th if they were, you know, of a certain age or older. And I was in the school cafeteria, and I remember praying, you know, when we had that moment of silence. And I really just wanted more. And so I started searching and becoming much more interested in religion. And I ended up going to a series of meetings, and I joined the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Wow.
which is a vastly different church than many of the other ones because they believe in soul sleep, biblical annihilationism, the evil, you know, the evil ones are destroyed at the end of time as opposed to the burning in hell for thousands of years and millions of years, and that's just the beginning. And I was part of that church or movement, however you lit, for 4 years. And in that time, I did become a deacon. I was, you know, I was conferred upon the title of deacon. And I did that for a while, which, you know, mainly in that church, you're setting up chairs, you're filling the baptismal font, that kind of stuff. It's, you know, your work. The word deacon means servant. And I don't think I've ever lost that mentality when it comes to matters of faith and other people. I view it as an act of service, either to the gods or to man. And I, for me, it's more an act to the divine or spirit that I continue to do these things. And then I just stopped going. Nothing happened. I still consider the former pastor a big part of my spiritual history. I have no anger towards my former church. It's not like something happened to me and I just left. I just stopped going. Maybe I had finished my time there. And then for a couple of years, I kind of just did nothing. And then I went and started looking into paganism again. And I would say that was about the time I really hit my major depressed phase. I was doing, you know, really bad in school. I had pretty much dropped out. I had not, you know, flunked out, but I was there and I started looking into paganism again. And I had some really good friends at that time. I could have gotten even worse than I was. You know, when they were moving, I had a horrible job, not because of what I was doing, but because mainly of management not really understanding, you know, how to treat your employees well. And that just added to my depression. And so it was through paganism I had continued studying, and I made a dedication to the gods that I wanted to reconnect to the divine. And that year was probably one of the oddest years of my life. And I was still not sure really where I was faith-wise, but I attended my first convocation that year.
Oh, okay.
And that, I would say, I really met the gods again in a real way. Or I met, however you define it, I met the source again, is probably a way to describe it. And I also met a wonderful woman who I'm still glad to say I'm with. And I want to say hi, honey. I know she's in there. It's the chat room right now. And really, I was still battling my depression, but I was slowly digging out of it. And I know it doesn't really go away, but I was kind of fighting my way out of it. I had a better job at that point. I had just gotten a better job. I hadn't really started working to the point that I knew it was a better job. But I went back to paganism, and I started practicing and praying. And, of course, that was when I really got connected with Bridget the first time. And so a year kind of passed on, and and then I kind of just hit a block. I didn't know where I was or what I was doing. And then I started looking at Christian scripture again. And I remembered that act of service. And so I started looking back, and I looked over my favorite passages, my favorite prophecies, that kind of thing, because that was very big in the Adventist church. And I looked over passages like John 6. And I said, well, I can't be Protestant anymore. And, you know, Christianity might actually be off the table because, I mean, I'm pagan. I'm steeped in this. I believe this. And then I started finding connections, much more so, you know, I knew them intellectually, that there were connections, that you could see Mary as a representation of the divine feminine, and we'll get back there. But I didn't really, you know, believe that I could follow it that way. Mm-hmm. And when I started getting back into monotheism, it took a lot of work, and I probably hit another strange point in my practice. There were moments when I was told, I'm not me. And then second convocation happened. And Bridget made herself known that she's still going to work with me no matter where I'm at. And I mean clear ways. I actually ended up with a card falling in front of me right between my feet on an elevator of a Bridget card that they had only made three of, and one had just happened to fall out of the salesman's pocket.
Mm.
And it just landed at my feet, and he wasn't in the elevator at the time, so I don't know how it ended up particularly there. I had walked into the vendor's booth, and I saw a statue of a woman with a swan, and I could feel my head just turn toward it. It was not like ooh, that's pretty. It was, no, you're going to look at this. And I walked out, and I'm like, wait, does Bridget have a swan? And I looked at that card, and there's a swan right there in front. And so I said, okay, I buy this. It now sits at my altar. And then I had was part of a Morgan ritual, and we did a journey, kind of a journey work. And I was told that I was going to work with everybody. And I wanted clarification. I didn't get clarification. I just got everybody.
Right.
But I would work through her and her daughter. And some of the myths have Danu, who is Bridget's father, with the Morgan in a very intimate way. And so it's possible that she is the mother of the Celtic gods. So I've realized that these beings are going to work with me whether or not I was going to go into another faith. These beings were going to work with me, and I was going to work with them. And I had spent a couple more weeks kind of just looking back and forth, and I had finally said, I am Christian, and I am pagan. I had rededicated myself in a way to Jesus, and I am both. So what do I do now? I can't be a Protestant anymore. I can't go to a Protestant church because I truly believe the body and blood thing. So I started looking around. I actually went to many Roman Catholic churches. Of course, I didn't get talked to there.
Right.
And then I went to a Episcopal church. And I was very honest with the father. I was like, you know, going, hey, I'm here in a blended with paganism. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. It doesn't seem right. And after a couple of weeks, he said, I can dedicate you. You can get dedicated this Easter, Holy Saturday. And I'm like, are you sure? Because I thought for sure that this would not be possible, because it's like I mentioned pagan. And he was sure, and we, you know, we continued to talk about it over time. And of course, I did go and get confirmed. Was what it was. It was confirmed into the church. And of course, I fainted during the very service, and that was a little bit embarrassing. The first time I met my bishop, I was in a wheelchair. So I heard an amazing sermon on gay rights.
I remember you mentioning that you passed out during it.
Yeah, I spent the entire service, the rest of the service, in a wheelchair. That's not embarrassing
fainted.
At all.
The Velvet Lion fainted. Sorry.
It was just an impromptu nap.
But,
I mean, were you okay? Were you physically okay? You were just.
I was physically all right. I was a little out of it, but I was okay. But I was looking. Yeah, Virginia, my girlfriend was there. I feel really bad, but she was there with me. That's. That's one of those moments where you're like, yeah, she's the one. But I had spent a lot of time, I was just looking at the, I was in this big cathedral when it happened, and I was kind of out of it, but I was staring at these amazing murals around the cathedral. And I really did think, this connection is not going to be that hard. I'm putting way too much worry into this. I should just move forward and see where it takes me. And really, it was one of the things that, you know, I jumped really much more into school again to make sure I did well. And I, you know, my depression is more or less pretty much gone now. And I would say a better job, my girlfriend, a lot of factors aided in that. I don't just say that it was one thing, you know, God cured me of my depression. I don't believe that. I believe it was through a lot of hard work and effort, and they were part of it. And that leads me to where I am now. And I was, remember teaching a class at that second convocation. It's like, this is what I want to do. I'm not going to be happy teaching on anything else than on faith-based manners. That's what I love to do. So I changed a lot of my classes. I'm taking anthropology of religion. I'm taking a lot more anthropology-based classes in the fall. And that's what I want to do with my life. And that has come back time and time again. I almost became a Christian pastor when I was in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I almost went to seminary. You don't get out of it just because you go somewhere else. A
right.
calling is a calling. And I think I've kind of gone on long enough on my story there, but
it's okay.
Take what you will from it.
What I'd like to do is to remind everybody as well that we are doing a giveaway this evening.
Yeah!
And that is, we are giving away a copy of the Horizon Oracle to the first person that calls for it, basically. But it's not announced on the show marquee, so I have a feeling nobody's going to call for it this week. But
you better call in. It's worth dozens.
It's actually, I think he sells it for, depending on the version of it and the deal and the package and what's with it, it's anywhere between $20 and $40. So if somebody calls in, they will get a free copy of the Horizon Oracle. And right now, Brett, I want to take a little break. And when we come back, I want to talk about some other things that Christianity has in common with paganism, including healings, resurrections, exorcisms, and divinations.
And bingo.
And bingo.
And bingo. I don't know. The Christians might have a much more money in that bingo game, I think. Hello, Marcy. I see you're in the chat room.
Yes. I'm still Hermit Boy.
Yes, the Velvet Lion was just a quick nickname just for tonight, probably. But I just said, hey, Scott, Brett's coming back on the show. And he goes, the Velvet Lion roars again. And it just came right out of his mouth.
Just sleep on it, Brett. It's a term of endearment that continues to keep on giving.
That's right. This one is serious.
I guess
we'll be back in a minute.
The fact of the, I should mention the Hermit, that card, that tarot card that keeps showing up.
thank you, and welcome back. I'd like to remind you that Main Street Universe is a network of 5 shows. This one at 7 p.m., activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with Jesse and Nicholas George at 12 p.m. midnight on Fridays. On Sundays, Transcendence with your host, Darren Bouquer, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. On Monday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Kevin Baird with Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey. And Kevin can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. And Ed's Brett's old radio show he used to be on, I debated him in a Monsanto debate, and his thing was, is Gaia stupid? He actually said that during the show. Kevin Baird got mad about that. This guy, Ed, that I debated, he's pro-Monsanto.
Oh, Monsanto.
Yes. And if you're listening, Ed, hello. I don't know how you're pro-Monsanto, but hello. And, of course, on Tuesdays at 10:30, now at nighttime, she shifted back again to nighttime, Mary Phelan and Inner Wisdom.
Inner Wisdom!
So she's been on the air for 14 years.
That's right.
For telepathic TV here in Virginia. So many people in the metaphysical community here in Virginia know who Mary is. So whenever I say she's on the network, they're always like, hey, when I go into the New Age shop. So many of them know. And we're also going to start writing a book, and we're going to do some channeling and things like that. And Mary's going to be a big part of that. So Inner Wisdom, 10:30 p.m. now. And then, of course, back to Wednesday, 7 p.m. Main Street Universe with myself and Janice. And soon we might do the World Reggae Party on Friday night. So Janice will be hosting that one. Her World Reggae Party show she does for a local Fairfax public access radio. The recorded version of it will go on to Main Street Universe on Friday nights, and then we'll open the chat room for it, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She's had reggae artists from Poland and different Eastern European countries and Iran and all over the place. So reggae's everywhere. We'll be starting that soon. She couldn't be here tonight, by the way, for those of you listening, because she is feeling a little under the weather. You can hear in the background my brother's changing his drum heads here. We're in Cafe Fairfax, the music studio here. And we're talking to Brett Hillman, who's our former, now returning host, co-host.
So glad to be back. I miss this.
Yeah, it's good to
people
have you
don't
back.
Realize it's a lot of work to do this every week.
New sort of, energy, new old return energy, I guess, so like a nice little shot in the arm. And we're discussing Christo-paganism, and we've gone over a few things. Let me just do a brief review of some things we've gone over for those of you who are just joining us. We opened up with a little bit about Zoroaster and the first sort of known real creation of this one's good and this one's bad, though some Zoroastrian practitioners would debate some more subtlety in that, but that's not what we're doing tonight. But there was certainly the idea of, instead of a whole bunch of different pagan gods, you had Ahura Mazda, and then you had Angra Menu.
Oh, so you're arguing from the dualistic.
Very dualistic, very...
Now I get it.
Please.
No, we, in a different level. Though.
Oh, okay. Oh, I know you're giving me a hard time. But, and also his...
Because I'm doing something else.
Yeah, Zoroaster's things were written in what he called the 17 songs, or the gathas. And then we went on to some similarities between Mithra, Mithraism, and Christianity, including a bread ceremony, 7 initiations, as well as the Christian 7 sacraments. So there's all sorts of similarities they had, the January 6th thing being that original birthday. The Christians used that and took that over in the 9th century. And, of course, we also drifted into some interesting arguments, such as how in 120 Common Era, Bishop Lyons claimed that the devil preemptively placed paganism first, foreseeing Christ's birth, and then using it as a trick later to deceive humans, to say, aha, look, I put these other gods here first as a trick, knowing that Christ was coming. So
Is that like it when we put it on the archives so you can listen to our show, yesterday's show, today, tomorrow?
That's right. You mean that next week you can listen to last week, this week, right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. If you go to our Main Street Universe main page on Blog Talk Radio, which can be a little tricky to find sometimes because it's not the most user-friendly thing, I'm going to start maybe having some conversations and going, what can we do to make it easier? But what we can do to make it easier, if you know us on Facebook and other social networking sites, is just, there's usually a blue link posted that'll take you to the show, and then you up to the top left there, it'll say Main Street Universe, our icon. You press that, and it'll take you to every archive and every future episode as well. So I might start posting that page a little more often because I have had people say, I was trying to listen to your show and I got one from October 1st, the first one you did or something 2 years ago or a year ago. So I'm trying to – I've had some people say that it's not very user-friendly, Blog Talk Radio, sometimes. So maybe I'll start posting our main Blog Talk Radio page sometimes so they can scroll through the archives a little easier. And then we went into a little bit about another commonality between Mithraism and – Christianity was the quote from Mithraism, he that will not eat of my body and drink of my blood, so that he may be one with me and I with him, the same shall not know salvation. As we all know, that's very much a Christian concept as well, the blood and the body and the eating and the drinking of all that. Now I wanted to go into a little bit of some other commonalities that paganism and Christianity have, and that is healings, resurrections, exorcisms, divinations, even magic, you might say. And I guess, Brett, maybe we'll start off with resurrection, and I'll let you maybe comment on that a little bit.
Well, resurrection really depends on how you look at it. I mean, the big thing in Christianity and Zoroastrianism and, you know, a lot of these religions to some extent, and Islam, of course, is the resurrection of the dead, especially for a moment of judgment. Judaism doesn't have that so much, but it does have a moment of resurrection for a new Jerusalem, more or less. But a lot of that resurrection into new life, if you look at it scripturally, and the Gnostics really ran with this, is the resurrection of the daily movement, the daily reconnection to spirit. And that's one where I kind of agree with, where you kind of have to daily choose to continue on this walk. You're not saved once, always saved. You're saved every day.
I'm all for that. I'm all for that progression versus a one-time shot guarantee. Like, you're always here to continue to progress.
Exactly.
To make those good decisions day to day.
Now, again, I mentioned the resurrection of judgment, and we in the West have a really skewed view of judgment today.
Yeah.
Judgment in ancient society, it was, you know, a judgment moment was supposed to bring peace between peoples and groups that have been having an argument, which could have started wars. I mean, judgment, we have this little thing that we look at it like a judge and a jury and it's always negative. Even if the person is vindicated or not guilty, it's still a very negative connotation that we have against judgment. Judgment saves things. Judgment protects people. And it's one of our biggest flaws, I think, that we just have this flawed view of judgment. And it's really scary. Because no matter what, we see judging as completely evil, and then we turn around and judge left and right. We make judgment calls every day. We don't even realize we're doing it. And Christians are quick to call Jesus' quote of judge not. But then they say they hate this or hate that. Well, those are judgment calls.
And that is interesting, and I agree with you that the concept of judgment, which, by the way, Marcy in the chat room had mentioned, is a topic for convocation coming up, coming year, being judgment. And people misinterpret its value. And then they'll sometimes grab onto it completely wrong and just totally harshly judge in the wrong way without understanding the value of judgment when it's done on a daily, simple level of judging things for yourself, what's good, what's bad, what's productive, what's not productive, what takes you farther away from spirit, what brings you closer, what brings you towards the right people. And by the right people, I mean those who are, you know, can be close to you, that can be good to work with, whatever that is. There's so many ways you can take judgment in the positive, and it's not always such a negative thing. I mean, do you not want to make good decisions for your kids, for example? I mean, of course, you have to make a good judgment. And one aspect I'd like to get into of resurrection, of course, some people mention reincarnation in human form many, many times. And this is something that many, many pagans kind of universally almost believe in. It's one of the things they don't argue about too much, though they might agree with it in a different form. One of the things they have in common with Hinduism, Buddhism sort of does, like at one point you don't have to do it anymore. There's some mention we mentioned earlier in the Bible of Isaiah and John the Baptist and all of this. There's a couple of mentions, and one in Matthew. Don't remember the exact, don't have it with me right now, but they mention human reincarnation, almost like Christ showing us an example of we reincarnate, we come back, just like if you go to the solstice example of what Christ is, though I know I could be opening up another can of worms there, but that example of it's physical, you know, a story of the sun being in the sign of the Southern Cross and then rising after 3 days in the sky. And it's an astrological tale, a tale of the sky. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Christ wasn't a real person. It's just there might just be a great metaphor there.
Well, even in the past, that some people look at scriptures to say, you know, to look at the evilness of Easter, they'll turn to a passage in Ezekiel, which is ironically in the sixth month of the sixth year on the fifth day, 665, which is kind of an interesting thing to think about, considering the fact of 666. It mentions people gathering and facing the east after 40 days weeping for Tammuz, which can be a real look at Easter, the resurrection after the rise, and, you know, after being crucified. Well, Tammuz kind of did the same thing. He died and then was resurrected. And Tammuz was a grain god. And a lot of grain gods have the death and rebirth story. I don't say every god has it, because that would be wrong. And a lot of people try and fit every god into one god, and there's different aspects there. I'm still very much on the fence on how I feel about things such as soft polytheism and hard polytheism. But that's another topic. Go ahead.
Again, it's just another example of the stories being based on the sky. Back then, having good sky watchers, basically, was sort of a bragging right of a religion. And think of the Christian story. The three wise men, the three magus, magi, basically three wizards who watched.
Zoroastrians.
Who knew the charts, who watched the sky, was predicting this sky event, and that this great, you know, maybe most important event in human history was going to happen under this important event in the sky. So then it becomes another chicken and egg argument. Was it the sky event that was important, the kid, or is it both? I think they could be parallels.
Well, here's another thing. Is the sky telling the same story? Is there a greater story that the sky itself is telling that keeps returning in these spiritual stories that we keep seeing?
Right.
Is it not that the stories are copying the sky? Is it the sky copying the story?
And that's an interesting way to look at it. Again, that can go more into a human creation possibility. How much effect can we have to where this is actually causing this, which could be a whole other can of worms there. I'm not trying to go too far.
I wouldn't say we're that great, but it's a story that might be going out throughout the universe. We don't know. We don't have contact with other life, but I am not opposed, and I think it's kind of silly to think we're the only things here.
Right.
We did talk about the alien visitation story, and I think a lot of that is a bunch of hogwash, but that I think if we had a more intelligent life, they'd be smart enough to not come here.
But then
look
again,
how we deal with
reason.
Our planet.
Yeah. I mean, that's one where we do actually disagree, but that's okay. I actually believe.
I'm not saying that all I think they have come here, but I don't think that all those stories are all aliens.
Now, let's take into another commonality between Christianity and my brother's working on his drum set, folks, behind me. One, and some people might actually find this one interesting, is exorcisms. In pagan practices, they would call them cleansings, clearing an area. They do all sorts of work to make sure that the area they worship in or do their thing in is a sacred space. Even in the case of the Druids, that don't even really cast a circle, but they still declare all spaces sacred, and they still do a cleansing ritual. So exorcisms, the idea of cleaning away of negative spirits, negative energy, whatever you want to call it, is something that Christianity does do. It's sponsored by the Catholic Church. They investigate with special authority and cases and all this sort of thing.
They don't talk about it much anymore, but...
They don't talk about it much anymore, but it's still there, and they still do it. So, any comment, Brett, on exorcisms?
Well,
have you heard any talk about this back when in your Christian deacon days?
Mm-hmm. I was not part of a exorcism, but I heard a lot of stories. But still, one of my main jobs as a deacon was to make sure everything was going okay, was to watch and make sure nothing happened, and that included on a spiritual level.
Right.
We made sure that things did not go strangely, and you know it wasn't talked about like that, but there was always that underlying tone and connection that we believed that evil spirits were out there, so we would engage in kind of a spiritual battle, and I still think that's true today. I mean, a lot of pagans, a lot of neo-pagans, and I would also say more in neo-Wicca as opposed to traditional Wicca, they tend to really gloss over negative spirits, but then they do the same cleansing things. They just ignore it. But I think the thing is there is spirits that are helpful and there are spirits that are hurtful. And ignoring those is actually a greater disservice than kind of standing up to them.
Right. Just like ignoring when you're walking down the street in a neighborhood, you know, at night and not knowing where you are, it would be ridiculous for you not to, you know, have your spider senses up and to not be cautious and to not be aware of your surroundings, of course.
And that's not to say all good deities or, you know, quote unquote good, they don't have negative aspects. I look at the dark mothers, such as the Morrigan, Hecate, Kali.
Right.
That is some dark energy at work there.
And of course, but those dark energies have a reason. I mean, they have a certain like purpose. There's a lesson to be learned. You're supposed to confront something. You're supposed to be able to face something, but it has to be intelligently and it has to be respectful, not that you can just, you know, put up a, you know, icon or statue of some, you know, death deity that you just researched and don't know what you're doing and then work with it. I mean, it's supposed to be with a certain intelligence.
And I hear people doing that all the time. That they will go and contact these spirits without having any idea. And Kali. Kali, in some branches of Hinduism, her job is the destroyer of worlds. And that is a very, very big responsibility.
It's a lot to take on.
Her job is to keep the balance. And you don't just go and talking with that sort of thing without preparation or respect. I won't mention names here, but I'll say the trickster gods.
Right.
Especially a very famous one in Norse mythology.
Yes, that rhymes.
But you don't just go and talk with them without having some experience. I know some people that will go up there and, you know, joke around with him, and that's fine. That's not my place to do. But even no matter what spirit or what form of the divine you're going to, God, Jesus, Bridget, Morgan, whatever, you always have respect. And that includes, you know, in Hinduism, you have respect for the source and whatever avatar that it takes. Again, Kali, Shiva, the Brahmins, and, you know, and Buddhism is a, you know, a completely different view that doesn't believe in a soul and stuff like that, but I don't see them going around and making jokes about Hindus so much.
Right.
They have a respect that I think a lot of us lack today, especially in the West.
And since you brought up some Eastern traditions, I wanted to bring up another interesting aspect of Christianity and commonalities it may have with other practices. I've stepped outside. I don't know if you can all hear the birds. It's a beautiful night out here today. There's a bunch of birds chirping. And that is, you mentioned Hindu. There's a lot of old Christ paintings and even saint paintings and other things where the painting has them doing the hand gestures, and the hand gestures being mudras. And the mudras, the most common one, I believe, is called the Pitva mudra, which is the one where you take the thumb, like if you just hold your hand straight in front of you and take the thumb and the middle finger and touch them together, and it's sort of for stability and solidarity. The most common one being the Anyali mudra, which is the prayer position. And the prayer position with the two hands together means balance, left, right, male, female, light and dark, all those sort of things that come about with the different mudras, including the pran mudra, which is the pinky and the ring finger and the thumb together. And there's quite a few old Christian paintings of saints and Jesus himself making this. And so I find this interesting combination between Christian and other faiths before, and they just always sort of find their way through, whether it's the time of year or whether it's, in this case, specific gestures.
I'll even say with finger gestures, when you make the sign of the cross, and, you know, the church I'm going to is an Episcopal, if I failed to mention that earlier, but when you make the sign of the cross, you are actually making a sort of symbol. You have your ring finger and your pinky finger held together, representing the two natures of Christ, and you have your middle finger, your ring finger, not your ring finger, I'm sorry, your index finger, and your thumb put together in the shape of a triangle representing the Trinity. And then you make the sign of the cross using that hand gesture. So hands themselves can be used as an act of worship. And I mean, not just the prayer position. I mean, you know, Christian prayer position is different than a Muslim prayer position.
Right.
Because they prostrate themselves. The very act and movement of prayer can be just as important as what is said.
And it is interesting, the physicality, and that could take us in another direction, in the case of the really classic prayer position for Christians, which is, as I mentioned, the Anyali mudra, is, you know, the two hands together in the center of the heart. Now, some people hold their hands up higher when they do it. Some people move around more when they do it. The one with the pinky and ring finger together on the thumb is called the pran mudra. And again, vitality, protection. And it's fascinating to me how these things have survived in the United States survive into Christianity, into the other religions even, and then, of course, they adapt them to their own purposes.
Adaptation. And that I think we can use to really lead into a discussion of Christo-paganism.
Right.
We can use it to look at other things. Actually, today, it kind of came up from my class. We were talking about a concept known as syncretism, which is when a dominant culture tries to enforce itself on a less dominant culture, but the more submissive culture takes on its trappings but puts its own meaning on it. And we see this in groups such as Voodoo, Santeria. It happened with the Mayans, as I saw today in a really real way in a video, which was really cool. And I think the same thing happened in Europe at first.
Mm-hmm.
I believe a lot of the Celtic and Gothic, you know, Norse ancestors were probably Christo-pagan, at least for a little while. I mean, we've had thousands of years of things being merged together. Where here in America, that conquering of people only happened at most 400 years ago, 500 years ago, a vast difference.
Yes. A lot of time went by where the new Christian ministers, of course, still had their own old pagan ways. And the Catholics, remember the word Catholic means universal, so they didn't mind adopting stuff. It wasn't all conquering and bludgeoning people over the head and all that kind of burning time stuff. They were being very, oh yeah, you got a goddess? Oh, we got Mother Mary. Yeah, come on in. You know, we'll keep your old statue. You know?
Well, that's the thing. A lot of the old statues were those. The statue of Saint Peter has a horn on its head in the Vatican. That's a statue of Jupiter. And I often joke that if Peter actually had anything going on that would have been weird in a statue, he should have had his foot in his mouth. Because he was always saying something before he thought.
Which will bring us to our next point, since we drifted in the Catholic direction. Of course, Candlemas or Imbolc, St. Bridget, which is someone that you said you felt close to, and she was a goddess that was adapted as a Catholic saint. And as you said, she sort of seemed to accept it smoothly and run with it.
Yeah, and actually one of my classes today, I was thinking of doing this for a while, and it just tended to fit in with a class. I'm going to actually write a paper on it and try and find where a lot of that information comes from. Because, yeah, she did not just sit down and let herself be stopped. She ran with it. She is the most popular saint in Ireland. Second to Patrick, and that's another story because Patrick wasn't even Roman Catholic. He was Celtic, and he actually opposed the Roman Church in a lot of ways, and in fact, the Celtic Church almost got excommunicated if it wasn't for a couple of councils intervening, and they kind of worked things out, but the Celtic Church really was very different. And a lot of the Anglican churches really still look at that Celtic as their roots, their spiritual roots. Many of them call them Celtic Christian churches, and they are part of the Anglican community. Some are actually Roman Catholic, but they call themselves Celtic churches. And a lot of things that happened in the Celtic world that didn't happen was the abbeys, that the big giant abbeys happened in Britain and Scotland and Ireland in ways that they didn't happen in the Middle East, where a lot of solitary monks happened. And Bridget really just took on the same job as a saint, the same blacksmithing, fire, motherhood, dairy work. And I was actually I remember I was talking with you because you were saying you were feeling this kind of universality, and it was me, and I said, you said you had felt a connection to Bridget. It's like, maybe you should still work with her because she kind of just ran with it. She's kind of above that one special aspect. And I went, whoa.
Right.
Okay, I get it. A clue by four on the head. It's, and from then on, she really has been my matron saint deity, however you want to look at it.
And let me take that then to our next direction, which I think blends in just fine and naturally, which is not only, though this might be a little different than paganism, but occultism and paganism, which I guess they're related, not only being different from Christianity, but actually sort of counting on it and its icons and its what you might call its pantheon, its angels, and to Enochian magic, the 22 angels, you know, of John Dee, and the idea of high magic, of literally conjuring up those in the Christian pantheon to be of good service to you through sort of long magical rituals, what some people, you know, like I said, call high magic. Then there's other versions of that too. There's like angel conjure and there's all this other stuff. But John Dee, you know, him and someone else he worked with, I forget the gentleman's name, were channeling, and they felt like they discovered the angelic language, which was a 22 symbols, and you chant them, you know, over and over and over again. You'd sort of get into this state. Aleister Crowley was sort of a student of this, and he kind of took it to another level with some different things in tantric yoga and all that. I won't go into that now. But there was not only just amongst common people doing their common people thing, like you had said, you know, okay, well, they adopted and they had Bridget and then they went and she became a saint and da-da-da. But what about, you know, highly intellectual people in high courts doing, you know, ceremonial magic and Thai magic and these other things, that, like I said, the 22 names, the 22 symbols, the 22 archangels. So they're embracing what you might call the Christian pantheon in order to enact high magic. So any comment on that?
Well, you know as well as I do that magic and religion are, while they are linked, they are separate. There's paganism and there is magic.
Right.
There's voodoo and there's hoodoo. One is the magical system and one is the religious practice. This same thing is here. They have just taken on a Christian flavor to work with the same skill set. And when we discussed high magic, that was probably my last show, except for the Penzac interview that I managed to get through between classes and a semester. But we discussed that high magic really has to have something that it can grab for its high ritualistic, you know, you have the four corners, you have people standing in specific places, as opposed to low magic, where it can be basically folk magic, where you pour some pepper on someone's foot or something like that to, you know, get them away. I'm going with a very specific example. But so high magic requires a religious context almost. It's just how it's utilized will vary from group to group.
Yeah, and it's very, you know, it's detail-oriented. They want you to say the names in a certain order, a certain way. I don't know all about it. I've never actually done the practice. As far as I mean the high magic practice, it's usually sort of initiatory stuff. I've seen and read things about it. I've read some of the old classics, which will take me to another person in just a second. But it is interesting how, now, some people have said in the high magic world, one thing that doesn't appeal to them is it's more about appealing to these energy beings, angels, in this highly ritualistic way where you get everything right in the ritual, but not enough connection to nature and raising energy. That's what some of the argument is. You know, the old, hey, let's hit some drums and chant. They do that. They do chant over and over again, but I think you know what I mean. It's less about that connection with Mother Earth and more about this ceremony, which to me would be about a trance and et cetera, et cetera. And speaking of people in similar in those circles, one of the great alchemists, Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa, actually at one point in his endeavors would balance a little bit of Christianity in his argument. I think he kind of went back and forth between forces of nature and forces that actually had names, like in the John Dee version we mentioned just a minute ago. But one he drew, I remember it was a picture that he drew of a man in a circle. Like, you've probably seen the one with the pentacle with the man in the circle and his arms are spread out. It's like a scientific symbol and his legs are spread out. His version of it, the man was standing in the shape, of course, of a cross, surrounded by a circle. Each hand had a star. The stars represented wanting knowledge of the stars and of the cosmos. The circle represented universality and a little bit of completeness, you know, and just constantly move, you know, that's what the circles represent, you know, the mandalas, their universality, they show the, you know, it's a constant, you know, beginnings and endings. So here's an example of where he's combining certain alchemy symbols and alchemical symbols, including the moon, I think, in one, which means intuition, with the Christian cross. The guy was clearly in the shape of the Christian cross, very much on purpose. And he believed that they could all be interwoven, intertwined, and that they didn't be separate.
Well, the pentacle was at one point a Christian symbol. It represented the five wounds of Christ.
And can still be found in Mormon churches, even upside-down ones.
Yes. And the Mormon church also have the giant pyramid for connection, very similar ways that various pagan pyramids were built, as far as we can understand them, like in, you know, the Americas more so than the Egyptian pyramids. Because the Egyptian pyramids were very specifically structured for specific reasons, and which is another cool story that I think we've discussed on the show a couple times.
Yes. And another interesting thing I'd like to bring up that people might say, well, maybe, I don't know, is divinations. Now, Christians have their own little divinations they do, whether they know it or not. Now, they might say, I'll never do the tarot, I'll never do a Ouija board, I'll never do this and that, you know. All the different forms, pendulums, runes now. You know, runes originally were not a divination tool. They were used for spells, though. Some people say they were, some people say they weren't. It's a subject for debate, so I guess I won't be absolutist about it. But Christians do the most popular one you can think of, show me a sign. That's a divination, folks. It's the same thing as flipping a card. You're asking.
And when things happen, and things happen, you go on with your day, and that is divination. It's
yeah.
The very definition of divination, speaking for the hidden things by God.
Right.
And other things that Christians do will. You know, they will do candle divination without realizing it or not. If a specific candle goes out, they don't use that candle for a specific ritual, at least in Catholic churches.
Right.
That's an omen. That is a divination work.
And
yeah.
Speaking of divinations, we've been discussing earlier that if anybody does call, we're down to the last few minutes here, but we are starting to give some things away here on Main Street Universe. And if anybody does call, they will get a free copy of the Horizon Oracle the first week. After that, we'll make it a game after we give away the first one. Then it'll be like guess a number, answer a question, something of that nature. And then we'll also give away some other things, Main Street Universe swag, pens, cards, stickers, maybe T-shirts every now and again, those kind of things. So we're going to start giving stuff away to let people know that that's what we do. You know, you get something to take home and say, hey, I listen to and I'm part of Main Street Universe.
And we do bumper stickers. I want one.
We'll get them. I'm getting stickers. We're working on all that. And pens, refrigerator magnets would be another one. And I'd like to remind everybody really quick of the five shows. This one, 7 p.m. Eastern, the flagship show, Main Street Universe. Myself, Janice, and Brett returning to join us again. Brett Hillman. And on Friday evenings, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour at 12 p.m. Midnight. Jesse's the author of two books. Actually, four now, but I won't announce what the other two are about. But it's a book with a companion workbook like the first one. So 12 midnight, Jesse and Nicholas George, whose blog, by the way, was just picked up by Green TV, which is often seen on CNN. So interesting break for her. And for all of us, of course. On Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Darren Bouquet with his show Transcendence. His next episode that he's on the air for, which he won't be on the air this week, but his next one will be about psychic vampires. That should be an interesting one. 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday evenings. Then on Monday evenings at 10 o'clock Eastern Time is Kevin Baird, Walking on the Sidewalk. Oh, somebody just called. I'm going to go ahead and take that call in just a minute. 313, I see you there, and I'll be answering in just a minute. Kevin can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. Then, of course, on Tuesdays now at nighttime, we have Inner Wisdom with Mary Phelan. So, that makes up our lineup, and I have to go do a quick thing here, folks. As we do have a caller, the button's acting a little slow. 313, are you there?
Hey, Daniel, of course.
Hey, is this Marcy?
It sure is.
And I'm going to go ahead and expand the show time just a little bit since you called. Hold on. Da 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 da.
Don't break it.
It's done. I think it's
yay.
Done. Well, thank you for calling.
I figured I'd call in and say hi.
Okay. Now, you know you called in. You can get a free copy of the Horizon Oracle if you wish, if you email me your address.
Sure, why not? I'll add it to my collection.
I know you have a vast collection of divination cards.
Far too many.
And I know the animal spirit one and the other one are your favorite, too.
The Hermetic Tarot.
The Hermetic. Sorry, I was flipping pages. So at some point, email me your address, and we'll send you a copy of the Horizon Oracle, which Brett has a copy, so you two can compare. Mm-hmm. I think Brett got the 111-card copy, so we'll see what happens.
I got whatever one you sent me.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one you sent, Brett.
But yeah,
it's been a while.
But we have our own plethora of decks. By the way, anyone out there that's listening that knows where one can find a copy of the Tarot of the Saints, I'm looking for it.
Oh, you know, Mary Phelan, our Tuesday show, had that person. What's his name? Page? Robert Place?
Yes. And I
had
heard
him on
it. Was like,
her,
oh.
Her show, one of her shows with us. The guy that created
it. You might be able to contact them directly, Brett.
What's that?
You might be able to contact them directly. It's not an out-of-print deck, is it?
Yes, it is. And the all things you find are really expensive. But I'm thinking.
Brett, you're breaking up.
Yeah,
it's
like totally snappy.
Hold on, I'll slap it. Snap out of it.
Somebody needs to get it.
That's not coming.
Brett, you're really breaking up. But anyway,
sure,
Mark, either send your address to me or to Kevin at he wrote it in the chat room somewhere here. Oh, Temple of Gaia at yahoo.com, and we'll send you a copy of the Horizon Oracle. So we're gonna start giving some things away and some swag away and some Main Street Universe stuff, stickers, bumper stickers.
Yeah, I definitely want bumper stickers.
Refrigerator magnets. I like the idea of refrigerator magnets because even if they don't like you much, somebody will use a refrigerator magnet, and it'll remind them, and they might occasionally go, oh, okay, I might check them out again. My business cards, when I made business cards, always when I had them in magnet form did I get better responses because they'll just use it.
So
they don't
get lost that way. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I have a
just
like
card
covered in business cards, and every single one of them is a magnet.
But did you have any comments about what we were talking about, Marcy?
No, not really.
Oh, okay. Just sort of calling in to say hi.
I need to turn my radio down. It's not even on.
It could have been a funny echo. There's lots of funny things that happen when people listen to Blog Talk Radio. I've had actually had
that. No, I know. Blog Talk has been a disaster for several weeks. They've fallen victim to several attacks that I think in this day and age they should be able to prevent. I find it laughable that they can't.
You should call them.
More sad that they can't fix them in a timely manner. It was over a month before I could actually get a solid call in, either a phone call in or actually logging into the site and being able to stay for a live show. Today was the first show I've heard since I came into the chat and logged in. It's the only time that I, in the last month, that I've actually been able to hear the entire thing.
Explain what's going on with my on the artistic.
Yeah. Well, Brett, you're breaking up horribly.
He is, big time.
But, there's been some technical issues. The ratings were like they were going way down, and I wasn't sure if they were accurate, but then all of a sudden they started going up again. So I'm wondering if these were just glitches and things they were dealing with.
They had a lot of issues. I read through some of the blogs. That's how I found out it was a DOS-style attack. They had some things posted on their customer service section. I haven't read back to see if they've managed to cure them all.
Yeah. I actually found a number to call, which I can't really announce because I don't really actually know it. It is a funny way to go through it, which I can tell you. I think I've told you in private before, but I found a way to get an actual human being to talk to, which I might talk to soon, and say, guys, what is up? Can I get somebody to help you?
Right. I hate not getting a human being. When I dial a phone, I expect to speak to a human, not press 1 for this and 8 for that and all the other garbage.
Yeah.
If I wanted to jump through hoops, I'd join the circus.
Yeah, because most of the time it's sort of email help. And I admit they do respond quickly to it, but it's still different than calling to a person, a person. And I've gotten good answers, actually, when I've gotten the operator. I've always gotten really good answers. It's just finding them, but I found them. I finally found a way to find them. And the secret will die with me. <That's good. laughs> They don't advertise it, for sure.
No, a lot of places that wish to try to stay completely online with communication are not in the habit of letting that sort of information lay around. But if you poke around, you can find it.
And since you're here, Marcy, I'd like to plug your Etsy store, or maybe I'll just have you do it. Go ahead and shout out your Etsy.
How about if I do it? Yeah, sure, why not? Spider in the Garden on Etsy. Not a real wide selection of items right now, but I'm currently adding to them. And looking for ideas and suggestions, you can convo me or message me on Facebook if there's something that you don't see that you would like to.
All right. That's Spider in the Garden. And I know Marcy's very knowledgeable and makes some interesting things and grows things herself. And so you get really natural things in that department if you're ordering that.
Absolutely. If I don't grow it, I wildcraft it, or it's organically grown. And anything that I purchase, it's generally from places like Mountain Rose Herbs. You want to free plug somebody that's excellent? Love Mountain Rose Herbs. They have the best stuff out there and the most wonderful prices.
All right, good. And I do think we've gone over time here. I'm glad you called, but I do kind of have to get going myself. But I thank you very much for calling, and I'll, like I said, either send that to templeofguy@yahoo.com or just send me your mailing address, and we'll get you that copy of the Horizon Oracle.
All right.
Out to you. And I want to thank Brett for being with us tonight. Are you still there, Brett?
I hope so.
It is really breaking up. Your signals. I'm glad it wasn't like this all night. But thank you very much for joining us. We've been talking about Christo-paganism and a bunch of different aspects of it. I'd like to thank Kevin and Veronica and, of course, Marcy for calling and everybody else who has joined us this evening. I actually had a funny thing where the chat room wasn't really working very well, but that's okay. We won't focus on the negative. It was fun to do a show, and this one is from our friend who was recently written up in the local paper here in Washington, Mr. Tom Teasley again. This one's called Night Over Baghdad, speaking of historical spiritual places. Thank you, everyone. You've been listening to Main Street Universe.